Mr. Danny.
Okay. House Committee on Revenue for April 20th, 2015 will come to order and will open a public hearing on House Bill 2991. Chris?
Good afternoon, Mr. Chair, members of the committee. House Bill 2991 deals with a tax credit. It moves the sunset date for the corporate excise tax credit for fire insurance premium taxes paid 1 year from January 1, 2018 to January 1, 2019. This tax credit is not part of the current group. It's part of the group of tax credits that will sunset in 2018. And the bill that you have before you just has a one-year extension of the tax credit. The unusual thing about this particular tax credit is that there is an interaction between the corporate excise tax and the insurance retaliatory tax, and which is basically out-of-state insurers. It's kind of an equalization for within the insurance industry. So certain out-of-state insurers will pay the retaliatory tax, and the interaction is such that, for the most part, if the tax credit were extended and there's a reduction in corporate tax revenue, there is an almost offsetting increase in the retaliatory tax. So there is a revenue light in there. It shows, for the one-year extension, the loss to the general fund from the corporate excise tax is $2.7 million, but that is mostly offset by an increase in the retaliatory tax of $1.9 million. That order of magnitude, because this is a light, that was information from 2012 when this tax credit was extended. It was part of the first group of tax credits under the current J-Tax review system. And it does not currently have a subsequent to J-Tax, so and we have different scripts here for you depending on the choice of the committee if you want to move it do pass or without recommendation down to J-Tax.
Is there anybody here to testify on that bill? Do we have any idea why they want a one-year extension?
I don't know.
Any comments from the members of the committee? We're talking about a pretty complicated area of tax law, but I'm not inclined to do anything with it unless some proponent comes along and explains why we ought to. Anybody have a different view? Okay, well, we'll close the public hearing on House Bill 2991 and open a public hearing on House Bill 2064. Is that yours, Chris?
Yes.
Okay.
House Bill 2064 pertains to the Legislative Revenue Office. It would require us to use a simulation to help the legislature make decisions determining the efficiency of economic development, tax expenditure, and tax incentive programs. There is in OLIS a document titled something Model Templates. And I won't go into the detail of this, but it's a three-page template, and these are templates from some tools that we're developing down in Legislative Revenue. The first two pages, the table entitled Manufacturing Firm, the second one is Services Firm. These are from a 2012 study that we did on the tax competitiveness of Oregon for corporations. And it was an example-driven report and where we developed this tool to kind of get at a micro level analysis of understanding the impact of various tax incentives. You heard last week information on the tools that we have from a macro perspective. We have a REMI tool, we have OTIM, and then we have IMPLAN. Those give broad, they're kind of a macro perspective, broad tools for understanding the potential impacts of economic policy and tax policy that the legislature may adopt. To complement those tools, we have a variety of micro level tools. And the sheets in here are examples of those where we go into for corporations and basically structure an example kind of corporation where we have a manufacturing firm or a services firm, and we can look at the incentives, a tax credit or other kind of incentive or tax policy, and what impact that might have on a given type of corporation. And it is very much micro level driven in that We take a firm, we pick the size of the firm, say the annual revenues, the cost of goods sold, the liabilities or assets the company may have, and a lot of times that information is driven from data provided by the IRS. We really want to make the example as concrete and as realistic as possible. And then given an example, then we can look at other states and look at their tax policies and see what the effect is of a given policy. And it just helps inform, it helps to inform the discussion.
Representative Rega Peterson.
Thank you. So so this bill came about because I was talking during the interim with LRO on how we can get at the question of having a better idea of the impacts or the outcomes of some of these tax incentives or tax expenditures before we actually pass them, and how and what impact they would have, and try to answer the question of that but for this policy, what might it be, but also the competitiveness of different with what's happening in Oregon with economic development incentives in other states and how they would and how that would be measured. And they were, this was something, a tool, the simulation that they were already working on, so they already had it, so they thought that this would be a way of bringing an additional tool to bear when we're making these decisions.
Thank you.
I have a question.
Representative, what's it?
I was wondering if you have any idea what your statistical confidence level or interval is on something like this. Have you taken older or previous studies and then set them to this? So do you know if it's like 50 or 75 or 90% confidence? Do you have any idea?
Representative Whitsett, I'm trying to process the question. The confidence level, I think I understand what you're trying to get at. These are a complement to that kind of approach where we have an example firm, a firm of so much revenue, the cost of goods sold, and what incentives might exist. So we can't use actual corporation data or any taxpayer information because that's all confidential information. So the intent here is a, for example, I'm looking at the manufacturing firm, which is the first page of this document. We would construct an example manufacturing firm that is realistic in terms of a total revenue within the given sector, and a reasonable amount of cost of goods sold and the property value that they would have in the state. And so if the tax policy question before you was a certain kind of value exemption, we could see what that might mean to this kind of firm, and then we could see what the property taxes are in the handful of states. The states that are included here are basically the Western U.S., and it provides that concrete example of if a firm had this kind of profile, what would the tax implications be of a given policy? It is very micro level. So that.
Okay. Representative Vance.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. And Chris, as usual, thank you for your work on this. The bill says a simulation as opposed to the simulation. So do you have a big pile of simulations back there from which you'll select one or another? Just asking.
We, with respect to tools, we're always tinkering and trying to improve the tools that we have. So this particular one was, these were some tools that we developed for this study from 2 years ago. And the third page of this was branching off from that work in conversations with Representative Vega Peterson about a direction that she would like to go, or a way to augment the tools that we have to help the committee understand the potential impacts of tax policy. Because we can talk about them in terms of impact on wages or personal income at a high level, but it also is beneficial to talk in very specific terms and examples. Even if we don't bring it up, we will get the question of, hey, can you give me an example of what this tax credit might look like?
Mm-hmm. So I've been having the same conversation in Vice Chair Peterson's Energy and Environment Committee on other issues. Mm-hmm. And the discussion comes down to the definitions of efficiency and simulation and, I suppose, even aid. All of us want the very best understanding of whatever it is we're doing. Does this bill advance us in that direction, or do you need more refinement?
there's probably always refinement that's needed. Where it gets us a little bit closer, I mean, we're working on these tools anyway, and this is almost a financial aspect of where a company might decide to take advantage of an incentive or not. Another example of where the legislature was exposed to this kind of work was there was the Department of Energy hired a consulting firm back from Massachusetts, and part of the work there was, if the incentive is structured in a certain way, how much money does it mean to a given kind of company? And if the incentive is marginally small, then relatively speaking, it's less likely to have an impact, presumably, on the decision, kind of getting at that but for. And where the policy modifications might best be made to improve the efficiency of these policy tools and to affect the decisions. Within the economic development literature and research that goes on in various places, generally there are broad tools that get used to estimate the impact of given tax incentives. And oftentimes the research is relatively mixed. You can look at it and see that it does have an effect or that it doesn't have an effect. It can often go either way. And what we find is that the incentives will go so far, they might not make a difference at a high level, but at the end of the day, when it comes down to a final decision, it could make a difference. So for example, a company is looking to expand, they might narrow their search down to a couple of states. And then when you get down to that level of detail, is where an example might prove helpful.
Well, yep. Mm-hmm. Right, and I agree with all that. What I was wondering is the phraseology in the bill suggests that you will use a simulation designed as an aid in making those determinations you were just describing, as opposed to develop a simulation to assist us in better understanding the efficiency of the device. There's a difference. And so my question to you is, should we revise it to say, we're asking you to assist us to better understand the efficiency of these programs, which, by the way, I think you've been doing anyway. So I'm not sure what this adds, because if you had such a simulation, well, forgive me, you're going to develop such a simulation because you understand the need for us to better understand whether or not free riders are enjoying our systems. And so...
Or how much.
Or by how much, right. So... my question was, do you need more direction in that? And if not, do we need the bill at all because you're already doing it?
What does this add, I guess, to your current practice? Would that be another way
of
saying
it? Sure, that's a good way of saying it.
That is a good question. Because we are constantly working with the committee and members to improve the tools that we use to better inform the committee. If there's something that we aren't doing that you would like us to do, then maybe the language should be modified to that extent.
Well, what we want you to do is save us from ourselves. Can we put that in the bill? Seriously.
That'd be section 3.
That would be a 6-2 vote.
That would be a 2/3 vote, yes.
Probably.
Representative Smith-Warner, please.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I guess... Chris, I kind of see this as the before version of some of the things that members of this committee have talked about, the after, which is when we are talking about transparency and wanting to be able to have a way to assess what the actual impact of some of this. So it seems like to me this is another, I consider this kind of a part of that, except instead of after it's already happening and being able to look at, you know, and we have the concerns about what we can look at and what we can't, this would be a way to more accurately model it beforehand with more specifics. That's kind of my read on what it would do. Is that what kind of how you guys would see it?
I think so. It would help provide more concrete direction on which way you would like us to go in the development of our tools. I mean, and generally speaking, we're always working on that. That's the definition of interim for us, mm-hmm. is working on the tools so that when it comes to the legislative session, we can implement those tools.
Thank you.
Yeah, thank you. Other,
Representative Whitson. Back to the statistical confidence, which in order to do this, you have to have something to base it on. If you want to have a confidence level that's like 90% or higher, you can't just have something and do it the first time and have confidence in it. You have to have based that, the model, on something else that with a known outcome, so you can measure it against the modeling, against previous models, if you will. Or so, I mean, I'm a little bit like Rep. Benz. I'm having a hard time understanding the first time that you do something how this is going to benefit us unless you have a background to compare it to your model. So, I mean, I guess you can always say there's a first time to do something, but then you're going to have to say this is the first time we've done it. We have no confidence in it if you don't have anything to back that up.
The challenge with all economic models is one of the assumptions is that everything in the economy is held constant and you can modify one policy at a time. Reality has a stubborn way of not abiding by the models in terms of everything else changing. So it's constantly a work in progress.
And I assume that when you build models like this, you are informed by other economic models that other people have used where we do have validity and reliability data, because you make a prediction and the prediction either comes true or it doesn't, or it partly comes true because of those pesky side things that keep happening. And so you slowly build your ability to make predictions. Do I understand that correctly, or have I missed it in some important way?
No, Mr. Chair, I think that is correct. We have a variety of tools, and they are under constant modification, and some of the models and tools that we have are developed in-house, and some of them are purchased elsewhere and then modified.
Okay. The question nobody's asked so far is, is this bill in aid of your budget request?
I'm sorry.
Well, having opened the door, I guess, let's say revenue officer is going to weigh in.
Chair, members of the committee, Paul Warner, let's say revenue office. I would say, I think something similar to what a discussion we had last week around the timber tax study idea, is that we would see this as you giving us clear direction that we want you to prioritize this and put time into it and make sure you've got a product for us in the next session. We may or may not do it if you don't do that. We'll have other priorities too, but obviously if you pass something and you tell us you want us to do it, we'll do it. In terms of resources, we're actually, I shouldn't speak too soon here because our budget's done in Ways and Means, but given our current service budget, I think we would be able to manage this within the resources we have. We have talked about, as Chris says, about the idea of a simulation model. Really, it's almost a case study kind of an approach versus the macro approach with the Oregon economy certainly I was trained in. But I think it gives you a good complement and could give you some insights into how tax policy may affect different industries, different firms, and different situations. So really what it's doing is, and you see this a lot in terms of the taxation literature, we'll take the two approaches. You'll see this in terms of comparing states' tax structures and how it affects their competition. They may go through and look at a prototype firm and see how that state's taxes compare with it, as Chris said about our earlier study, or they may go through and run an econometric analysis on different tax systems and see if it correlates with growth over time. Those are the two, that's the macro and micro approach. So I think they're complementary. I think this could be something that would help, I think, in your policy decisions.
Is there any way for the committee, or this committee and the Finance and Revenue Committee, to give the Legislative Revenue Office an expectation of priorities other than writing a statute?
Yes, I think so, Mr. Chair, and we certainly know in terms of working with you and Chair Haas and input from the committees, we do develop a work plan for the interim, and so that could be one of the things that could be on that work plan and part of that work plan. Normally, we think in terms of committee meetings, but that would also involve the areas that we spend our time working on. So that's certainly something that could be done informally rather than through the statutory process.
Well, it occurs to me that this is a kind of a big blunt instrument, when what we might better do is write a memorandum of understanding and call it good.
Yeah. I think that's true, Mr. Chair. I think, you know, if it does get to a situation where it is a fiscal impact on us and we do need resources to do
different
it, then, of course, going through the budgetary process and the statutory process probably makes sense.
A different problem. Yes, Representative Banta.
Thank you. I want to make it clear that I understand the need for the device and the discussion, whether this is the right instrument to push that forward or not is a question, but the one thing that is of greatest interest to me is the definition of that word efficiency. So whatever we do, we sure would want to know what you guys are thinking, we're thinking, when it comes to that particular goal. So
yes.
Yeah.
Yes. And there's different ways you could measure that. Look at, for example, what your goal is, whether it be employment or impact, income impact, and compare that with the tax loss as a result of it. So, I mean, that's the kind of thing we've worked with before, and an efficient tool would be one that maximizes that relationship.
Yes, please. Yeah.
If I may, it would seem to me that, depending upon the program that you were looking at, that there could be quite a wide variance in what those incentives are designed to encourage, and the measure of those outcomes very difficult. And we encountered this in our discussion on both programs, why we're trying to get a measure of a metric, if you will, for these things. So this is the best conversation I think we've had actually about it, because it focuses squarely upon the major problem.
Yes.
What are we getting for our dollars? So,
yes. I agree, Vice Chair Benson. And you know, I think you have a good example with the sunset extensions that are due this round. There's really not a lot. We tend to think of economic development and job creation as being a primary objective, and of course it is for you, but there are a lot of other objectives in the tax system as well. And one of them that is very predominant, if you ask taxpayers, is fairness or equity. And so you need to have measures of that as well. And I think you can have measures, although equity is naturally a subjective term, but you can have measures on how it affects distribution of tax burden.
Final thought.
Mm-hmm.
The thought would be that you would have a definition of your take on what we mean by efficiency, that is what we're trying to achieve by virtue of the device, and then before doing a great bunch of studies, work designing systems and simulations, make sure we're all together on what it was we were trying to accomplish with the tax credit or the program.
Mr. Chair, Vice Chair Benz, yes, this is why we always badger you about when we have a tax expenditure to get that policy statement and that impact, because that's the guidance we need.
Right.
Mm-hmm. That helps you figure out what the word efficiency means.
Yes, what it is you're trying to maximize.
In that
case,
yes. Representative Vega Peterson, please.
Thank you. So, when I had the conversation initially with LRO about this idea of how we could get a better access or better idea of what we were talking about when we talked about some of these programs, I was actually pleasantly surprised that they had something that was already partially worked on, but also so simple to do. And so I think I went in expecting we were going to have a really big, complicated bill, and it's actually very simple. If we don't need the bill to do that, that's fine. But I would say that if we're going to have an interim work plan that takes this into consideration, we should have the conversation about what other things in helping us to measure and judge the tax expenditure efficiencies, that's included, not just the simulation piece too, but some of the other things that we've been talking about both in this committee and others.
Representative Leininger, please.
I think this is, thank you very much, and thanks for working on this, all of you. I think it's interesting and important information. I think I would hate to have it end up seeming like a black box out of which we got a number as opposed to really showing the math on different, I think, outcome data. I think it's not a substitute for careful tracking and assessment of how things are working out in process. And I think that a pre-digested sort of description of how we anticipate things are going to work could have value, but I think, you know, it's going to be hard to have that substitute for really close tracking of what the outcomes are for me to feel comfortable. So maybe we could do both, but I don't see this being a silver bullet.
Thank you. Representative Vance?
I apologize for thinking of something else, but it seems to me that on that list of deficiencies, there would be right up front the question of whether or not a tax credit is the proper device to use as opposed to ways and means in a direct expenditure, because sometimes I think perhaps, there could be some other better way of doing it than using the tax code to achieve it. So that should be a question right off the top. If it isn't, and it may well be already, I can't remember that list of things we go through. I think it may be there. Is my memory right?
Yes. Chair Vince, it is one of the questions we ask, and it is something that we wrestle with a lot. And part of it has to do, I know the chair has commented on this, it's kind of how you're structured in terms of legislative decision making. We really run into this in terms of the benefit cliff work that Chris has been doing and we did in the interim, because you just inevitably run into a combination of fiscal tools, both spending and credits, that are being used to accomplish roughly similar objectives. And this is one of the things we've really pushed to try to get the policy committees to look at and work through as well. So, and I think you're going to see some of that in the Joint Tax Credit Committee and work in that area. It's difficult just because of the way we're structured, and you're adding a whole other layer of complication. But you're right. I mean, those that comparison has to be made.
It gets Representative Whitson.
Well, since I've never done this, I'm older than computers, basically. So I was wondering when you're developing simulation models. How do you decide how many variables or the delineation of the parameters when you are developing a model? Because it seems like it's an infinite number. I mean, this is one of the problems I've always had as a scientist with computer models, is that there are outside variables and there are an indefinite number of them at any given moment in time. And so I was just wondering, how do we do something like that on something this complicated, if you will? Every single thing you're looking at, you're going to have to set up a different set of variables and parameters then? Or
Representative Whitsitt, you're right that the most complicated in the model in the world is a gross simplification of the world. And so we have to start from that and recognize that what we're doing is looking at a tool that's going to help give us some guidance, that's going to show us trade-offs. It's going to allow us to do comparisons for different policies. But what we're looking at here is that, and of course, one of the greatest limitations in any of this kind of work is the data. And the data that's, not on there now, but the IRS data that was on the third page of your handout, that's data we get from the Internal Revenue Service and their data on national firms. So we've got that data by size of firm, and we've got that data by industry. So that's what we're going to do, is pick a prototype that's representative of that data. And that will show what the deductions they have, what credits they use, what federal credits they use. And then we'll allow us to, the policy levers will change, will be the state credits or state deductions or state tax expenditures, and show how that affects the effective tax rate for that prototype firm. So in a sense, we're not really predicting an outcome. We're just saying this data is reflective of the typical firm in this industry, and if we change this variable, this is what it does to their ultimate tax burden. And so, and this is what, you can see how it would affect different industries, you can see how it would affect different size categories. And I think the other thing, and I know we've talked with Vice Chair Vega Peterson about this, one of the many lessons of the Betsy experience, was to really factor in federal policy when we look at those kinds of tax expenditures and what federal policy is and how that may affect overall tax rates for that industry or that prototype firm.
Thank you. It occurs to me, well, may I ask, is there anyone here who signed up wants to be heard? Steve, why don't you come up and talk to us?
Mr. Chair, members of the committee, I'm Steve Robinson, Decision Metrics. I want to talk about two things regarding this idea. One is the process and one is the substance. With regard to process, I guess I have a little concern about the idea of just handling it as a MOA as opposed to a bill. And this may be my unfamiliarity with the process of arriving at that kind of agreement without going through committees and having votes on it. Just wanting to make sure that there's an opportunity to have public input on what the directive looks like, and then later, once the model is actually in use, I think it would be good to have some ability for members of the public to see inside it, to see what, you know, how you're doing what you're doing. And I'm saying that not out of any suspicion of the DOR. I mean of LRO. I think that they do marvelous work in general, and they have excellent people on staff that make no attempt to hide what they're doing from the public. But there have been instances in the government where models like this are less than transparent. And so I'm just hoping that we can come up with a process that does involve an appropriate level of public input, both in terms of the objectives and so forth and how it's implemented. With regard to the content, I want to go back to Representative Witsit's question. I think it should be a given that regarding the confidence interval and how confident you can be in the results, I think it's a given. I found this, and I do this kind of work a lot, although nothing as complicated and detailed as what LRO is going to do. You never know the first time you operate a model like this how accurate it's going to be, and it's only through repeated usage and polishing over time that you get to the point of where you have confidence in what the results are. And that brings me to something that I think really hasn't been mentioned, but which I think could be very important, which is the idea of being able to do sensitivity analysis with this kind of model, where sensitivity analysis is where you say, let's start with a set of assumptions, and then let's vary the assumption by 1% and see what happens. If you're talking about a tax rate or you know, $100 worth of tax credits or something like that, you know, let's see what the you know, how sensitive the results are to a small change in the parameters. And I think you can be more confident in the early stages about doing a sensitivity analysis where you're just talking about small changes than trying to predict whether you're going to have a $10 million effect or a $100 million effect with all the other economic variables. You can have some idea, I think, of what's going on. So I support the building of this model. I think it's an essential first step and something that will be very useful as we also try to pursue greater accountability and transparency in tax expenditure work. And I hope that it happens, whether it should be a bill or you know, some other kind of understanding is really up to you.
Okay. Questions for Steve? Thank you. Appreciate that. And I appreciate the reminder about why we do bills the way we do them. It's useful. Anything else on this today? I would simply note that we need to continue this conversation, whether it's in the context of this bill or in some other way, and reach some sense of what the committee would like the limited time of the LRO to be spent on during the interim between now and next February. Any thoughts about that topic? Have I hit it more or less, Representative Whitson?
Well, I was just thinking maybe the way to do this would be to try this for a year or so and then go back and check the data and see how it compared to what your models were. You know, I mean, that goes to what we just heard as testimony. You can check the sensitivity of something. I mean, you can fiddle around with it, kind of, but if we did it and didn't take the results as absolute for a year or two until we can set some sort of a model that looks realistic for the state, that would make a lot of sense to me, instead of having something that then we're going to say, okay, we're just going to use this data, this must be right, but to have a program to try it, see if it works, and then go from there.
We're going some slightly different ways. Yeah. Christy, would you like to want to respond to that at all? I'm looking at Section 2 of the bill, which says the act becomes operative only if the LRO completes the simulation before December 31, 2015. As I look at that, I'm not sure I know what that means or what it's supposed to mean.
I think the context of the discussion, I think Vice Chair Benz may have touched on this. It refers to a simulation or the simulation, and we really wouldn't want to be restricted to one tool. So whatever simulations we're talking about, whatever models that we're talking about, it depends on their applicability. So I'm not really sure what Section 2 mm-hmm. gets at in terms of being operative, because, again, as the committee just discussed, if there is some sort of prioritization that the committee would like us to follow, then we would follow that. Otherwise, we're constantly working on the models and improving the simulations that we run.
Right.
And trying to incorporate real-world results to modify the models and take actual data to get at Rep. Leininger's point about actual information, using that to inform subsequent versions of models, kind of that repetitive nature.
Mm-hmm. Okay. All right. Well, with that, I think what I'm inclined to do is ask those who'd like to pursue this to work with LRO to see if we can fluff this up so it does what we want, and then bring it back. Does that make sense? I think with that we'll close the public hearing on House Bill 2064. Colleagues, it was requested that we hold over 2747. Apparently there's some issues around the actual revenue impact of that idea, and so we're not going to open that today, and we're not going to hold it over to a certain day. We'll wait for proponents to bring it back if they do, with a refinement of where they want to go on it. And but that will open the public hearing on House Bill 2158. Okay. Hey.
Good afternoon, Mr. Chair and members of the committee. So House Bill 2158 ties high school graduation rate to personal income tax rates and corporate excise tax rates. So if high school graduation rate falls below 65%, then the additional tax brackets will be created and tax rates will be higher. And if the graduation rate goes above 90%, then the tax brackets will come back to current low levels and tax rates go back to current levels. By the way, the additional revenue through higher taxes will be dedicated to school improvement fund. And for your information, I've added what happened to school improvement fund. There was an appropriation in 2007 session. Mm-hmm. Since then, there was no additional appropriation. And in another file, you will find the use of school improvement fund money. It does a lot of wonderful things if money is available. And since this bill covers K through 12 education, personal income tax, corporate excise tax, I'm asking Chris and Christine standing by to answer any questions about income taxes. So that's the brief summary of the bill.
Let me add a couple of comments about this idea. I want you to recall that we have a fund called that I think is referred to as the State Employment Tax Fund that is used to cover unemployment payments for people who qualify because they've been laid off of work. We haven't done much with that fund. I don't think that this committee has had any hearings or explanation of that fund for a long time, maybe ever during the time I've been on it, precisely because it simply works. And one of the reasons it simply works is because when the fund is small, the employment tax goes up, and when the fund is big, the employment tax goes down. And it's done automatically by action of the people who operate the fund within the parameters set by statute. It's one of those things where the legislature turned on an automatic pilot, and it just works. That was the insight that I think that led to this idea. The proponent of the idea, who I'm not going to name, saw this as a possible way of starting to think about managing state budgets for the purpose of doing the most important, the thing that I think all the members in the House and the Senate have all agreed is the most, one of the most important things we do, which is to make sure that schools get funded adequately. And with that, I've got two witnesses who want to be heard today, Gary Coe and Matt Evans. Please, come forward. State your name for the record and then give your testimony.
Good afternoon, Mr. Chairman and members of the committee. My name is Gary Coe, and I'm today representing the Oregon Small Business Administration, Small Business Association here in Oregon. We have a hard time seeing the correlation between graduation rates and corporate and individual taxes. Corporations, small or large, have little to no impact on what the graduation rate is. It seems like if you want to affect graduation rates, and we agree that they are dismally low and unacceptable, and we believe that they can, in fact, raise considerably as we look at comparisons of some private schools that have 98 to 100% graduation versus what we're looking at today of somewhere in the area of 60. So we think that if you want to affect graduation rates, Mr. Chairman, I understand what you were saying about the automatic pilot of the other program that you described.
The employment tax, yeah.
But those two things are related, employment tax and the unemployment fund needing to be there. These are unrelated. So if you have if you address graduation rates, it seems like you would put penalties and incentives to school administrators and the superintendent of public instruction, not corporations. The second thing I'd like to mention is that we went through these tax rates with ballot measure 66 and 67, and I ask that you, I believe the revenue department has some statistics on how many taxpayers we lost to the state of Washington as a result of that ballot measure, and I suspect that the same thing might happen again if this was to be enacted.
Thank you. Mr. Evans.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. My name is Matt Evans. I'm a resident of Raleigh Hills. I'm here today representing the Taxpayer Association of Oregon. When I look at this bill, let me use an analogy to try to tell you what I see here. If I had, imagine if you will, I had two children, they're both in high school. The older boy is not doing very well in school, and the girl, a sophomore, does better. Every time my son flunks a test, I take away some of my daughter's allowance and give it to my son. That's essentially what this bill does. There are plenty of places to, I think, put responsibility for Oregon's poor graduation rates. The taxpayers of this state is not one place to put it because they are bearing the entire burden of the education system already. I think this bill provides some very perverse incentives for school districts and around the state. It provides that if they don't do their jobs and they only have a 65% graduation rate, they get more money. If they do their jobs a little bit better and get it up to 75 or 80% or even 89%, they still get additional money. It's only if they can hit 90%, completely arbitrarily, apparently chosen figure, can the taxpayers of the state get any relief. I would encourage you to look elsewhere for responsibility for Oregon's poor graduation rates. The other thing I want to mention is there's kind of a fad going on in this session with the automatic increases in tax revenues. We expressed our concern about the 911 bill, HB 2351, previously with the automatic roll-ups of tax increases. That is really not the direction the state needs to go in, and because it comes back again to something I talked about a couple of weeks ago in this committee. This committee and this legislature ceding its power of the purse to third-party players. I don't think that's really what you should be doing. You're in the Constitution with the power of the purse for a reason, and you should guard that, I think, zealously and jealously against giving it away to anyone else's discretion. So the Taxpayer Association urges a no vote on HB 2158. I appreciate the opportunity to testify. I'd be happy to take any questions.
Thank you very much. Questions for this panel? Thank you, gentlemen. Appreciate your testimony. Oh, Steve Robinson again. Is there anyone else who wants to be heard on this bill? No one else has signed up. You're back.
Well, you've heard from the opponents of the bill, so I thought it would be only fair to give you the proponent side. Unfortunately, I can't help you with that.
Could you state your name for the record?
Steve Robinson, Decision Metrics. I agree with the prior speakers that there is no is not nearly enough nexus between the tax rate and the graduation rate. If we were to do something like this, I think there would be all kinds of gaming going on all over the place with regard to the graduation rate, and so the unintended consequences of a bill like this would be staggering, I think. That doesn't mean that there aren't examples where there should be a feedback loop. I think the transportation funding and the gas tax and so forth is an example of where a feedback loop would be most helpful, just like with the unemployment tax. But this isn't the one.
Very good. Questions? Representative Whitson?
I don't really have a question. I just have a comment.
Please.
So in our district, what we are finding that there is a direct correlation between absenteeism and the lack of graduation. And we have excellent teachers, we have excellent curriculum, but we seem to lack parental oversight of the student. And so we have a lot of kids that just don't show up. By the time they're a senior, they often have not been in school up to 3 years already. So our district is instituted something new this year where groups of parents go out and knock on the doors of the families whose child is not coming to school, essentially. And we found it's really, really helped to go say, you know, are you paying attention to what your child is doing? And that seems to be the biggest thing that we're finding is through either drug abuse or alcoholism or just plain old not paying attention, the kids just aren't graduating. They don't feel the necessity or whatever. So I would have a really hard time supporting something that is non-correlative to what we're finding in our district anyhow. And we have, unfortunately, prior some of the highest non-graduation rates in the state. And it's, you know, it doesn't seem to be related to that in particular. So.
Great. Thank you. So you think that this mechanism, the simple mechanism of parental feedback, is of use?
They say it's helped a lot. And furthermore, we've been working with our DHS director down in Klamath, and we've set up a little thing in the schools where the parents who are receiving social services have to come to school to get their checks, and they have to make sure that their kids are in school before they can receive their social services, and it's helping a lot.
Whoa.
So those people have an incentive before they can get their money each month from the state to make sure that their children are in school. And I really commend our DHS director for coming up with this idea.
I wonder if you could get us some more information on this or point us to the right sources.
Yeah, I could probably have him come up. His name is Dr. Jeremy Player, and he came over from Idaho with his idea, and they came up with the district. And, I mean, we'll see how it goes, but so far it looks like it's going in the right direction.
Of course, those aren't strictly revenue committee issues.
No, no.
But there will be time in the education committee for discussions that don't have directly to do with bills once we get a little further along in the session. Might be worth pursuing. Thank you for that very much.
Mr. Chair, when you and I were on the Eugene School Board, I think we both remember hearing about the importance of adult involvement in kids' lives and how that is one of the key things. So maybe tying a tax rate to adult involvement somehow might be a good idea.
That would provide a direct feedback. Thank you. Anyone else want to be heard? Thank you. With that, we will close the public hearing on House Bill 2158. See you all tomorrow, 1 o'clock. Committee's adjourned.